Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I'm Lauren, and I've seen CSI through and through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and these are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 3, Episode 3, Let the Seller Beware. Original air date is October 10th, 2002. Director is Richard J. Lewis. Writers are Anthony E. Zeiker and Andrew Lipsitz. We start the episode, I think, as we almost always do, with shots of the Vegas Strip, but not for very long before we go to the burbs. And like the nice burbs, the like mansion-y burbs.
There's actually one, I think the first shot is actually quite long. It's like 8 seconds.
Is it long? Okay.
But it doesn't change.
It's just one shot.
A weird helicopter pan scene.
Yeah. But there was a lot of cut scenes of Vegas in this episode. So Nick, what was our Vegas score?
We end up with like 4 or 5 additional scenes. We end up at an LV score of 35.
Okay. Respectable.
I would say that's above mid. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, mathematically and sort of statistically.
Yeah. I say that's pretty good. Yeah. Okay. All right. So we go to the burbs. Again, very nice burbs, mansions, gigantic houses. We go to a couple arriving at one of the mansions. They get into the house via the lockbox. They have like the code to the lockbox. So we are to assume that this house is for sale.
Yep.
So for those who've never bought a house before, locks.
Outside? No.
Sorry, what was that?
Was there not a for sale sign?
There might have been.
Yeah.
There might have been. It's been a weird week for me since I got back from the Bahamas. So I might have missed some things in this episode. But so they're going through the house. They end up like doing something that you should not do when you're viewing a house, is like going through the closets and opening the drawers and trying on clothes. They end up, again, we're to assume, had sex.
Yep.
And then they go outside, they're putting their like clothes, they're getting redressed.
Yeah.
They go outside, they're looking at the pool, and then blood starts dripping onto the woman. And
I do have to say, on watch number 2, the scene when they walk out and they look at the pool, I don't know the reaction of the actor, the pacing, the way that he sort of like walks forward, the blood dripping down, it sort of becomes like a spontaneous distraction. Like maybe someone wouldn't have predicted that was going to happen.
That wouldn't be my thought.
Right. Mm-hmm. But they sort of set up like he was starting to lead her towards the pool almost intentionally. And like there was like this, he was like staring at it intently.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. This is important for later on in the episode.
Very important.
But I was like, I didn't clock it. Didn't seem out of place the first time I watched it. The second time I watched it, I was kind of like, oh.
You're like, oh.
That's very well shot. I like that. Kudos.
Kudos, CSI. And the director, one Richard J. Lewis. So we then see a dead woman on the canopy, and Grissom, Catherine, and Jim Brass are there. We learn that the owners of the house are Cal and Monica Newman. Monica is his second wife. And at the moment, the husband is missing, which is leading them to believe that he is involved. And maybe this is a murder-suicide situation.
Are you familiar with this scene? I don't expect you to know her name. Her name is Evelyn McHale. It's a very famous suicide where they jumped off the roof of the Empire State Building and landed on a car.
Oh, yes. Okay, and I didn't know the name, but yes, I do know that case.
It's often called like the most beautiful suicide of all time.
Yeah.
And there's some very famous photography from it. I felt like with a woman on the canopy, they were trying to
like pose her in a similar way.
Do homage. They do this a lot in things. It comes up in pop culture a lot. And so I was like, oh, this looks like the lady in the car. And it the way they pose her, and she's in like a nightgown, but like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And there's maybe additional reasons for that.
But yes.
Yeah. It's, I thought of that. I don't know that it's intentional, but I think it was,
I wouldn't be shocked.
Maybe a reference to that.
Yeah. That
cinematography wise.
I wouldn't be shocked at all if that's the case. We go to credits. We then return to Nick and Warwick on scene. They're lowering the victim. They've like cut the canopy. They're lowering the victim down. Grissom finds cigarette butts below an open window. This is where we learn that that Cal Newman has a son named Max. He's 15 years old. Then Augie Heights, the broker, is with Grissom. I know. I had to like stop and write it. I was like, Augie Heights. As you could probably tell listening to this podcast, I like said it very deliberately because I was like, I feel like I'm going to not say this correctly.
Stacy fake name.
Yeah. And this is where we learn that it is illegal to give out the combo to the lockbox. And I do believe that this is true. I think you can only give it out to like real estate agent, you know, you can give it to like people that are, have certain credentials, but you can't, if I'm just an individual and I want to go see a house, they can't just be like, oh, here's the lockbox number to get into the house.
I'm sure the laws are state by state and
I'm sure they are
the same everywhere, but my guess is that's pretty common. We never looked at a house. Like, Augie is the seller agent, right?
Yes.
His job is to represent the person selling the house.
Yes.
Most people have a buyer agent.
Correct.
Whose job is to help you find houses. Yeah. And the agents will connect. Your agent will know a lockbox.
Yes.
Key, and then go to the house and or have access to the key or be told where, you know, exactly. Something.
Yeah.
And so it's, I'm sure today there's a preponderance of digital keyless entry tools that people are using.
Oh gosh, I'm sure.
But
I mean, I went house hunting.
Have a digital lock, so they probably still use lockboxes.
Oh, they do. When I went house hunting last year, there was definitely still lock. Yeah. I mean, I primarily went to open houses, so it wasn't a thing. But I did go to a few wherein it wasn't an open house. You could just like stop by the house.
Yeah, the hotter the housing market, the more it's open houses, the less it's go look at my house because it's been on the market for a month.
Yeah, exactly. And,
you know, no one's hanging out there all the time.
Yeah, yeah. So we then go to Catherine. She's with the couple that were perusing the house, and she wants to know like what they were doing beyond copulating. She's like, I know you're doing other things in the house. What other things were you doing in the house? And she also wanted to know if they had touched a laptop that they had found in the house as well. She's very interested to know if they did anything to mess with that.
Yeah, they make a reference at first almost I thought it was a robbery. The closet had been tossed.
Yes.
And all I can think is like, you know, it's one thing to go through a house and look at stuff, but if you're not putting things back.
Putting things back.
Like, you're going to get in a lot of trouble.
That's what, like, I still felt weird doing it because most of the houses that I viewed, people were still living in. Like, they weren't empty houses. And I would open, like, closet doors to get, like, a feel for, like, how big the closet was. I felt weird doing that, like, opening closets because I was like, oh, I know they have things in here. But I was like, I want an understanding of how big, like, what do I have for closet space, et cetera. I can't imagine, like, tossing people's clothes around just don't do that if you're going to be a house hunting, okay? Don't follow this couple's example.
Yeah, they had many bad examples from this couple.
Yes. We return to Chris and Nick and Warwick by the pool. Nick finds this like red liquid. We find out that it's food for hummingbirds. It's like a sugary type of food for hummingbirds. This becomes very important, which is the only reason I'm mentioning it.
Yes.
We really end up harping on the hummingbird food.
It was so out of place that initially I was like, this has got to be mindful because this is really like, I felt like I like almost started writing stuff down and then I stopped because I was like, well, you don't know everything. But like 99% of hummingbird feeders are made of glass.
Yeah.
And you would never have glass on like a pool deck.
No.
And I'm sure a lot of them are made of plastic now because almost everything
So many of them are made of plastic. Because I was looking into getting a hummingbird feeder because we have hummingbirds here and they're almost all plastic.
But 20 years ago, even fewer things were made of plastic than are today. And for whatever reason, hummingbird feeders were one of those things that were often made of glass, I assume, for some reason. Because you want it to be clear because the liquid is often colored. It looks pretty. But either way, like, what a terrible place would be to put a hummingbird feeder would be like on the pool deck.
Right.
You were like on the edge, like where the chairs are, where people are sitting, because like you want it on the edge of the woods where the animals are, not in the middle of your house. And I was like, they must need this hummingbird feeder to be here for some reason.
Yes. And they chalk. Spoiler alert. They do. Then Sarah arrives and we learned that she was paged 2 hours ago, but she gets a solo case. So she's immediately sent out. Why he couldn't have just called her and said, go to this place instead of coming to this crime scene and then sending her to an entirely different crime scene. I don't know.
So we could have this scene where
I know.
But also like I can't continue with, I don't know what the policy is at Las Vegas CSI, but Grissom is potentially the worst boss in the world. We've had some pretty
cases. Have many examples.
If you could do that other case with one person, did you need four people here?
Right.
Did you need all four of you? And Grissom, by the way, handling evidence again, not afraid that he might have to take the stand in this one.
No, he's fine. He handled his time on the stand well. Yeah. So
I mean, he can't discount himself, right?
Yeah.
I figure because of like filming and pacing and the way that scripts are, nobody mentions the hearing thing for Grissom. It doesn't really play a role in this episode. That this was likely written kind of in a vacuum and is sort of like a filler, and we'll have more storyline episodes later. But you could make a defense. Oh, well, he doesn't want to handle evidence if he was still doing that, but he's obviously not doing that this episode. So it really is just getting back to the Grissom Sarah friction storyline and why she probably should have been working for the Bureau of Graving and Imprinting or was by now.
But she's still here. Nick then finds two sets of prints by the pool. Work walks over. The husband left everything behind, like clothes, wallet. Like, this is very strange.
Keys, which is important because he didn't leave and go somewhere else.
Right. This leads Grissom to ponder, was the pool cleared? And Nick's like, yep, nope, it was cleared. And Grissom's like, does it look? Because they pan to the water and it's very murky. It's very cloudy. Mm-hmm. And so Warwick and Nick do a game of rock, paper, scissors to find out who's going to go in the pool. Nick goes in the pool, goes in, no gear.
Yeah.
Just not even goggles. Literally just takes his shirt off, which gratuitous Nick taking his shirt off scene, and jumps into the
pool. Let's stop with the fact that you are explicitly interested in locating a body right now.
Yes. That's what we mean by clearing the pool is the husband in the water.
That opaque water, nasty enough for the person doing. But also, Nick, you are going to contaminate the F out of whatever's in that pool. Like, your whole person is in that water now.
Yep.
So, yeah, definitely Hollywood moment.
Yes, for sure. So Nick there goes
many,
in.
Many of those moments in this episode.
There are. So Nick goes in, finds the body, as Nick says, probably contaminates the hell out of the scene and potential evidence, but, you know, he finds him, so there we go. We leave this crime scene for a bit. Sarah's with Lockwood. They're at I put football field, and then I realize later it's a soccer field. They're at a soccer field.
Yeah, there's probably a single field for both. Yeah.
And we learn that the victim is Mandy Kirk. She's a senior. She's 17 years old. And at this point, they're wondering, is this a wild animal attack? She has like these horrible gouges across her chest.
Like,
so they're
really
like
wide and deep.
Yeah. So they were like, wow, was she mauled by, you know, a mountain lion or something of that nature? We quickly find out what actually happened because we go to Sarah with David at autopsy. She bled out. Like, that's not a surprise. But what is a bit of a surprise, teeth marks are human.
Yep.
The daisies.
Yeah, it's, which I'm not even sure how at that point he's gotten, he must have taken impressions that we didn't see because there was so much blood.
There's so much blood.
And it's like, so hard to see. And then we learn something else really important. I'm not stealing your thunder.
No, go ahead.
That she has E. coli.
She does have E. coli.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is, I just wrote down in my notebook as one word. E. coli. No context. They have a whole conversation about wisdom teeth and age. She asked,
yeah, the age of the attacker because
I wrote that down. And then because I made a note that like, okay, yeah, I get age of the attacker, which they don't lean on this other than to say like later on they're like, oh, did so and so's wisdom teeth come in or whatever.
Yes,
but like also wisdom teeth, the most removed teeth in a person's mouth.
Also that, and I only have three.
Yeah.
And I know other people, and I know other people that have less.
Yeah, like, I have none because they grew sideways and then they were like, yeah, those are coming out.
Oh, no. I mean, like,
I never got one.
I only grew three of them and I still have them. They need to get taken out, but I only have three. So like, if I bit on the side that one never developed, you'd be like, oh yeah, she's like 16 to 20. No, I'm not.
Yeah. It's like, if there were wisdom teeth there, you would be able to say things like, oh, our attacker has wisdom teeth, so they, like, you know, have had them taken out, or they are younger. But if, like, they don't have wisdom teeth, and it's like, well, then you still have those two age groups, right? They have the people who they haven't grown in, but at almost any age, because my wisdom teeth never, like, came out of my gums.
I don't know. Like, yeah, they were impacted.
Them, yeah, I have them dug out. Yeah, mm-hmm. One coming even through the roof of my mouth. The dentist was like, does this hurt? Yeah. I was like, no. He's like, well, it will one day.
it's gonna.
here's a doctor to go see. You're having surgery. You're not. This is not a dental thing. But yeah, and it was just weird. Like they spent a lot of time on this wisdom teeth thing.
They do.
And then like at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because they just have teeth impressions, which are pretty unique to an individual.
The E. coli plays a much bigger role. Yeah. Than the wisdom teeth do in this case.
I got great notes, but actually not really about E. coli, but it's involvement later on.
Okay, all We return to the other crime scene. Nick and Warwick are vacuuming the pool. Nick is very upset that Sarah got a solo case. Like, he harps on this multiple times during this episode. He's very upset that Sarah has a solo case.
And, like, there's really, like a disposition where, like, Nick clearly, to him, is, like, working solo is, like, an honor and
yes,
a positive. And Sarah is, like, is basically upset that she's working alone.
Yeah. Yeah, she doesn't seem thrilled about this, and we'll end the episode with part of why she's not happy about this.
Yeah. Yeah, she'd prefer to work with someone else, specific someone else.
Yes. So we then meet Cal's son and ex-wife. They're talking with Catherine. They want to get in the house. Catherine then asks Miss Newman to ID the body.
Cal's son not look like the spitting image of a 2000s. Teenager.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
Spiked.
Yep.
California kid.
PacSun representation right here. No, 100%. I had to do a do I know this person, and then I just realized I just know him from this episode. Like he is in quite a few things. Like, he does have a decent repertoire, but I looked and I was like, I haven't watched any of these things.
I don't have any Spot the Guest Stars this episode.
I don't either. So there we go. Grissom is in the pool. Jim Brass is standing outside the pool. We learn that the victim has been in the pool less than 12 hours, which seems to fit the timeline from his secretary. And there's this, like, vortex in the pool. And there's this cover that's there that's supposed to, like, prevent your, like, hand. Yeah. I think it's more so for, like, hair, to not get your, like, hair pulled into it and stuck into
I'm
it.
Sure,
but, like,
kids,
also not for your...
Like kids could stick their arm in them. So at the bottom, I have a pool. At the bottom of my pool, there's always a drain at the base of your pool near deep end.
Yes.
And that draws water out from kind of the bottom of the pool, right, as water sort of usually gets entered on the top of the pool. And you usually have a skimmer on your pool because its job is to take all the stuff that's floating on top and make sure it doesn't make it to the bottom. But yeah, that thing at the bottom has a big cover over it and usually has sort of like a special valve on the inside.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a safety thing, but obviously you want it to be mixing the water at the bottom of your pool and drawing it in. So I'm sure they make all sorts of weird things for it.
Yeah, yeah. The ex-wife walks over. She confirms that the body in the pool is Cal. Then we have Archie going through a virtual tour of the house. Catherine walks in and we learn, and I don't think this ends up mattering, but we learn that a sculpture is missing from the house. There's a sculpture on the dresser. And it's in the virtual tour, but it's not in the crime scene photos.
They find it later on in someone else's apartment, I thought.
No, they don't.
No?
Mm-mm, no.
Maybe I was just assuming they were going to find it somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't. It sort of comes up again, but there's no... I feel like this might be a missing scene sort of situation. That like they maybe filmed a scene about this and then just never... It just didn't make the cut.
There is a general like notion of internet is scary in the scene.
Yes.
People are putting their privacy online. Three-way house tours are so common today.
Ooh, Lordy.
Zillow and Redfin are all about your...
Yes, it is. I didn't do a virtual tour of my house. I just had pictures. But
even if you just had pictures, like, you still see all the same stuff.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a video or whatever.
Yeah.
Also, great, great magical zoom and enhance powers in this episode for photographs.
There definitely are.
They a lot of stuff that even ChatGPT wish it could do.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not sure about this. So we then go to Sarah and Lockwood again. We learn that the victim, Mandy, was a soccer bunny to a soccer player named Chuck Darwell. And we learn that Chuck was rushed to the hospital, and Sarah's pretty sure she knows why he was rushed to the hospital. But we don't immediately go there. We go to Grissom with Doc Robbins. We learn that Cal drowned, but the injury to his hand was post-mortem. So it wasn't like, oh, he was swimming, his hand got, you know, pulled into the vortex, and then he drowned because he couldn't get out. The hand was post-mortem, but he also has friction burns on his chest. He has broken ribs. Like, it seems like he went through the ringer before he died.
What's interesting is this whole, like, vortex thing seems to basically be irrelevant. Like, he wasn't intentionally sucked into the vortex. It just happened to have happened.
I think it's I think the killer made it seem like that's what happened, but I also think that it acts as a red herring to, like, point to somebody else later in the episode.
I think it's an important part of the episode. Like, important part of, like, there's always like little threads and like you got to follow them and eliminate suspects, right?
Yeah.
So like, I'm not saying that they're like misleading us necessarily. This is like kind of bog standard, but they spent a lot of time on it really early.
Yes.
And then it's like, okay, I guess that really wasn't that important. And they sort of tell you early on, right? Because in the autopsy, you know right away that like, that wasn't part of the murder. That was just a thing that had happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we also learn that there's no evidence that the wife was sexually assaulted, but they still sent a kit to DNA. And she has like a recoil bruise on her hand. But it's Grissom postulates that this wasn't like her willingly shooting herself because of like where the bruise is. It's like somebody held the gun in her hand and then fired it.
I spent most of like the second watch through being like, why do they drown the husband to then just shoot? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, because we never get the storyline of wife finds her husband dead from an accidental drowning. And she's so distraught that she kills herself.
No, they never even attempt
Because that's the only, like, why would you stage it that way other than to tell that story? But we never are told that story.
Yeah, they dismiss suicide almost immediately because women are incapable of committing suicide.
Well,
in their mind.
No. They don't say that. They say that women prefer using pills, which is true.
Yeah, yeah.
Like some women do shoot themselves. That's, you know, it's not a 0% thing.
Like another time Grissom was like, well, she didn't shoot. Like he's very, just very dismissive of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, but you're right. They never really follow that.
No, they never follow that.
I don't know. Remember the gun. They may have talked about it. I don't remember if the gun was even theirs.
It is. It was found next to her body.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so at least they used a weapon that was in the house to make it look like maybe it was suicide, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We then go to a video of the wife in the pool and she's, you know, like, oh, come and join in the water with me.
This is gratuitous. They really drag this scene out.
They do. Archie, Catherine, and Nick are there. The video then cuts to a personal video of her, you know, undressing. Nick has to say blam twice.
He's like, blam, blam.
And then they identify a guy in the background, the broker.
Yeah, which...
Okay, spoiler alert. It's a cutout of the broker. It's not actually the broker there. Did you call it the first time watching it?
No.
That it was a cutout?
No, but I was like, why is he standing like that?
Yeah, like he was like standing with like his arms crossed.
While she's doing this like thing. Like
the sexy, like, ooh,
disappointed with her. the camera. I didn't think about cardboard cutouts at all. But on the second watch, I was like, how come they didn't like watch what he was? They didn't watch him.
No.
Because that would have given it away. That
would have given it away.
Remote and never blinked.
Yeah. We pop away from the storyline for a bit. We go to Sarah and Lockwood at the hospital with Chuck and his father. They take his stomach contents because they're public domain.
I guess it's later. So they take the stomach. That's basically biohazard. I mean, they're CSI people. They treat it fine. I have words to say about this, these stomach contents later on.
Oh, all right. We'll get there pretty soon. But before we do, Rich and Brass and Catherine, they're with the broker. He had lust in his heart. I don't know. This whole scene was weird. But Catherine then is like, all right, give me a DNA sample. And he's like, yeah, sure. Like, I have nothing to hide. I will, like, willingly give up a DNA sample. Warwick is then with the pool guy. He's giving Warwick some information that Newman had a bit of a temper, that he and his son fought quite often. And then
I couldn't tell if the pool guy was sleeping with the wife or not.
He was trying to.
Yeah.
I only know this because Warwick is like, can I look in like the cab of your truck? And he's like, yeah, like I have nothing to hide. Knock yourself out. And he finds the screws to like the cover, the vortex cover. And he admits to doing it, but he says he did it because he wanted an excuse to go back.
Yep.
And basically the idea was like, well, the more exposure I have to her, maybe
the more attention, like, she'll give me.
Yeah. The more attention she'll
that's what give I mean. Me. Like the whole scene, I was like really confused. Like, wait, cause the first line is like, oh, you probably get a lot of tail or.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they used to, they're a little more vulgar than that. But he's like, yeah, I was like, wait, but is he sleeping? But then they didn't find any of his DNA later on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, it's like, I guess not.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this is the red herring, right? The pool guy is supposed to be your like, ooh, it's the pool guy. And he got jealous of the husband and then killed the wife in a, you know, fit of passion or something, you know, like something along those lines. This is definitely supposed to like serve you. Know,
I should have checked the pool guy for a guest star. I mean, I didn't recognize him.
I don't recognize him.
But he does like have like that everyman style face.
Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't tell you his character name anyways. His character's name is Pool Guy.
I just have him as Pool Guy in my notes. We go back to the lab. Nick and Grissom are there. Nick finds a tooth filling. Grissom is talking about the mildew buffet from the feeder. Greg Sanders walks in. He has the DNA results from the wife sample. And there are two results. The minor donor is her husband. Major donor currently unaccounted for. So she was definitely having an affair on her husband. They just don't know at this stage with Nick and Work are then recreating the video. This is when they find the cutout of the broker in the closet. So,
yeah.
Okay. But then
they don't take a photograph of it. I thought they like pick it up and Nick like throws it down and went, isn't that evidence?
We have no problem with contaminating evidence in this episode.
I mean, you're not going to use it in a court, probably, but like,
nope.
I was like, you're a little, cavalier is the word I guess I would use.
Yeah. So then Grissom and Catherine are back with Archie, and he has an idea that, you know, like they, you know, they found the cutout. Like maybe he could use like similar techniques to identify the cameraman, which this is a scene where I was like, I don't think you can do this. He just is like, zoom.
Certainly not that well.
And we learn through CSI magic that the cameraman is the son, Max. We then go to a fairly gross scene. I was glad I had eaten breakfast like quite a bit before I watched the scene. So this is when Sarah is examining the stomach contents. Greg Sanders enters. We learn that part of the stomach contents is PCP.
Yep.
And a lot of it. Like, how is this kid still alive? He was on such a high dose of PCP.
This does they do address the source of this later on.
They do.
To me, it was like almost like farcical.
Okay.
That you would put that much of a drug that's probably very expensive in a drug that is typically not that expensive.
Right.
Contamination of other drugs. Now, this is, I wrote down, I have a couple of things for this scene.
Okay.
How disgusting it must have smelt in that room. Anyone who's ever thrown up in their life.
Oh, yeah. It's so
gross. It smells good. And it's been maturating at room temperature. Also,
no masks.
It's infected with E. coli. I know she's wearing gloves, but like, where's like the clean room suit and like the breather mask? And I was like, I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm sure. I don't think E. coli is spreading aerosolly, but like, I would be definitely taking more precautions and also just trying to protect myself from the smell. And then I thought Sanders was going to walk in and make a comment. I said, I was like, I had like a pause where I was like, oh, okay. He's going to be like, how are you putting up with this smell? And she's going to say something or whatever. And it's like, you know, well, you can't take it, Greg, or, you know, that's the sort of what I was expecting, but no, they just pretend it's normal. Just sit there and sit through someone's stomach contents.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I would not, it's not good post meal.
No.
Watching.
No, I would not recommend. And before we end the scene, Sarah takes something out of the stomach contents, which she really hopes is raw chicken skin, but it's not. I mean, it's skin and it's raw, but it don't belong to no chicken.
Nope, no spring chicken for sure.
Nope. We go to a less gruesome scene. Jim Brass and Catherine with Jerry and Max. And this is where they show them pictures of Max with the stepmom, like very compromising pictures.
I had this note in my notes, and I think it's this scene, but it may have been earlier. I don't know, when they're interviewing the son. There's some point where he goes, can I plead the fifth?
This is right here. They show the pictures and he goes, can I plead the fifth?
They just steamroll through that comment and keep asking him questions.
Yes, they do.
they think they're accusing him of a crime. They haven't arrested him. They haven't read him his rights.
Nope.
And I went, I don't care if this kid did it or not. He's not going to jail.
Right.
You can't literally tell the cops you're pleading the fifth and then have them not read you your rights or provide you representation. Like,
yeah. Who cares?
Like, I mean, it's played for like his ignorance, and he did something wrong.
Yeah.
He at least realizes he shouldn't have done the things he's done.
Right.
Whether it's legal or ethical that's not what this scene's about, but just the way they just kept going. He's like, can I plead the fifth? They're just like, please tell us more information.
Yeah.
No, that's the opposite of pleading the fifth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in addition to them steamrolling him, his mom slaps him hard. Like, he gets a slap-o from mom.
I don't know if they arrest her for assault, but...
Yeah.
We
see a reenactment of which, like, you know, he killed his father and then killed his stepmom in, like, a fit of rage. But we learn that this doesn't really hold up because he can't swim.
Yep, that's it. Can't swim. That rules you out. You couldn't possibly have done any of those murders. I will say, I do come back to this later on.
Okay.
Because then I thought, oh, maybe the son did kill him and he was just wearing scuba gear.
Yes, we do. Scuba gear does come up.
Because he can't swim, but...
He can't swim.
You don't need to swim if you've got a rebreather on.
That's true. But... So we then are back with Sarah and Lockwood. Dental impression is being taken from Chuck, and we see like a quick flashback of him eating flesh, but he's saying he doesn't remember killing her. Like, he's now kind of admitting that he like remembers eating her, but he's like, I don't remember killing her. We have a short
Grissom. I remember he was like there. Yeah. He's like, I could never have possibly killed her, but like, okay. Cause like they don't check. Oh, they do have his stomach contents. That's where the chicken.
Yeah. That's where the chicken came from. It's his stomach contents. Right.
I did note that Sarah has this like trope where they keep pitting her against men who have potentially harmed women.
Yes.
And then like she gets very I don't know. She's meaningfully angry.
Yeah.
Probably rightfully angry in most cases.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, it doesn't really bear out that way.
No.
And spoiler, he's innocent-ish.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he's involved, but he's not. Yeah. He's not the murderer. I mean, yeah.
And this is one thing that happens is that we will learn the drug course of action later.
Yes.
But like, he wasn't even trying to take
PCP, no.
A drug that crazy.
No.
In fact, by today's standard, he could have been doing something very legal.
Yes. Very true. So we then have a short Grissom and Catherine walk and talk. And this is where they lay out that there must have been a struggle in the water. That, again, Max couldn't have been involved. He can't swim. The death was directly tied to a struggle in the water. Nick is then very upset over Prince. And he's very upset that they have, like, next to no evidence collected from the pool. But he did ID neoprene, a.k.a. a piece of a wetsuit. Which leads him to think that this was a professional hit. Because, like, why would somebody be wearing a white wetsuit in a pool?
Yeah, because it's not a common, like, wetsuits are black. Like, if you went out today and were like, oh, I need a wetsuit because I'm going to do X, Y, or Z, you would 99.99% come home with a black wetsuit.
Yes.
You make them in other colors. They probably make them in other colors for a number of very specific reasons.
Yeah, but they're always black.
But you would need a white one if you want to blend in with the bottom of a pool, which is almost always white for a lot of beautification reasons.
Yes, yes. I just went swimming with dolphins and we had to wear wetsuits and they were black.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Also, white is expensive to dye things white.
That's fair. Yeah. And it's just going to get gross looking quick. You know, like black doesn't show, you know, wear and tear as much as white does. So, yeah. So Grissom and Jim Brasser then, I put with blonde guy. We later found out his name is Peter. But at this point, I was like, I don't know what his name is. So I was like, I'm just going to put down the blonde guy because I don't know who this is.
Took me 15 seconds to even know he was the guy from the first scene.
Oh, yes. He's the guy from, so this is the guy, part of the couple from the first scene. And he's like, yeah, I was all over the house. Like, you're going to find evidence of me all over the house because we were, you know, canoodling around the house. But we do learn that his prince came back military. He is ex-Navy SEAL. And
it's a very weird scene where they make reference to this thing from SEAL training, where if you quit SEAL training, there's a bell and you ring the bell and that's saying you quit.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not actually ex-Navy SEAL if you ring the bell because you never became a SEAL. You're just ex-Navy.
Almost, became a SEAL.
I think you can come from other branches, so I don't want to like pigeon.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know anything. I don't know that much though, but they call him an ex-Navy SEAL, but then they imply that he wasn't a Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
But a lot of that is really just to impugn his character, right? For the audience being like, here's a guy who doesn't have, they say, you don't have the character for it.
Yes.
In other words, you're
not. Yeah, he had the physical qualifications. He didn't have the mental qualifications to be a Navy SEAL. We also learned that he has a Scandinavian name, which again comes back up later because otherwise I would mention it.
Yeah, I think you're supposed to believe that Grissom already has an idea at this point.
Yes. Yes. Grissom definitely is brewing up what he thinks maybe is going on here. We're then with Sarah. She's with the dental impressions and the wound. She's trying to do a matchy matchy. Greg Sanders walks up, but she does not have a match. Like no. Chuck's teeth do not match the wounds on the rib. Grissom then finds Greg Sanders in the locker room, and we learn that Greg Sanders is at least part Norwegian and is asked to take off his shoes and socks so that Grissom can run an experiment on him. But Grissom doesn't tell him what experiment it is. So this is like another, like, you're really abusing your power here,
also,
Grissom, in like very uncomfortable ways.
Like,
Greg.
Yeah?
I need you to take off your shoes and socks.
See, now we're getting into this whole strip forensics thing, and I'm not so sure I can hang with that, even if you are my boss.
You should be fired. I'm sorry, Grissom.
Like, this is so uncomfortable.
You cannot do this to another human.
You cannot
human
do this!
Certainly not without his consent. You should not be asking him to do it without telling him what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
It's very, very bad.
It's so comical television relationship moment, but it's like, basically he's breaking a pretty bad law, I would say, by today. Like, if your boss did this to you, you're filing a lawsuit.
Oh, 100%. 100% you are. And so then we go to Sarah and Lockwood back at the high school. Another student is sick, a Nicole Exmoor. And we go to the lockers with Nicole. This is where we learn that her and Chuck were smoking weed, which was laced with PCP. Evidently doused in PCP with like how high of a dose.
Yeah, they were like how high it was in his thing.
Yeah. So, supposedly laced with PCP, but evidently doused in PCP.
So to like close this, well actually let's get to the end of this scene because
yeah. So we see the reenactment of the murder, and Nicole theorizes that, you know, in her kind of drug-addled state, that she wanted to be her. So the idea I think is like she basically was consuming her so that she could then become her. And in her PCP brain, this made total sense.
Yeah, and they talked earlier about how it's like the out-of-body experience, right? So she talks about like
disassociation.
Feeling like she's watching this happen instead of doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're going to assign her a person. They're going to arrest her, mm-hmm. all that 9 yards.
Yep.
I don't know enough law to comment, but I think about sometimes like what I would think if I were on a jury. And if a person was like, here's the thing. If you're taking drug A,
yes,
and somebody has laced it with drug B, there's really no difference between you're saying I'm drinking my coffee and somebody put PCP in my coffee, right?
Right. And all I did was intend to drink coffee.
Yeah. You are in a out of state mind that you're probably not really responsible for your actions.
Right.
And you did not choose to enter that state of mind. No. You are basically forced into that state of mind by another individual. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm ever convicting her of murder here.
Fair.
You know,
yeah.
I don't know what I am convicting her. I don't know what other things they'll charge her with, but certainly they definitely can't like say she premeditated anything. So whatever they go with, or manslaughter or whatever, but like she basically has an insanity.
Yeah. I would imagine that the charge would probably be manslaughter.
Yeah.
Right, because it wasn't that she willingly killed this other person, right?
Like, had she chosen to take PCP and then killed somebody,
I would go like second degree murder. Probably.
She would be responsible.
Yeah,
but because she was, you know, drugged. Like, imagine like you're a designated driver at a bar and somebody laces your drink, and you go home and you get in a drunk driving accident.
Right. Yeah.
It's like I did not intend to drive intoxicated, and I probably wasn't even intoxicated when I left the bar or under the influence of whatever, you know, and then you got in a situation. It's like you were basically like the responsible party is the person who drugged you. So it's like, I don't know what the laws are like. There might be precedent on this. There might be rules for this.
Yeah.
Who knows how this gets settled? But from like a case standpoint, it's kind of like, but the same is going to be true whether it was her or him.
Yes.
Right. And it's like neither of them are really responsible for their actions in this situation. And they don't really talk about
it. No, we definitely, we actually wrap up the scene with like a dare slogan. Sarah's like, oh, remind me of this when someone says that experimenting with drugs is harmless. And I was like, thanks, dare program leader, Sarah.
I'm going to really quickly Google, is pot legal in Nevada these days?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. It is here.
Yeah, since 2017.
Okay. So that seems about right.
So yeah, today what he's doing wouldn't even be considered an illegal drug.
Illegal. Yeah. So, but
if it was PCP, that person would like. The thing is, they should be going after this drug deal
again. Yeah, we don't. This is more so a storyline to show drugs are bad. Don't do drugs, kids.
You're right. It's very
rare. That is literally the point. This of is the your
brain. This is your brain on drugs. Eating your best friend.
Yeah.
So, I was going to say the E. coli for her friend. There's like a whole thing, or like they realize she has E. coli, and when they're talking to her in the bathroom, I was like, if this is her best friend, they could have just eaten the same burgers.
It's not her best friend.
She calls her best friend in that scene.
Does she call her best friend?
Yeah. Oh,
okay. It's been a weird.
A good friend or something like that. And I was like, so they could have just been like hanging out.
Yeah.
Eating burgers together.
Yeah. But that's not what happened. We then, understandably, have Greg Sanders storming into Grissom's office because his left foot has dermatitis, because the experiment was to see if the mildew would develop this dermatitis, because it is common in people of Scandinavian descent to have this reaction to this type of mildew.
And Greg's mom is Scandinavian.
Yes. So we then have Grissom back with Peter. He has a warrant to see his feet. And crazy enough, his feet have the rash and they're size 12, which is one of the sizes of prints that Nick lifted by the pool. So this is where we get. Yeah. So this is where we get the reenactment of the actual murder of him, like in the suit, waiting in the pool, ambushes the husband. There's a struggle, kills him, and then goes inside the house and kills the wife. And he's like, yeah, okay, but now you have to convince a jury that I just, like, killed two random people for no reason. And he's like, oh, and Grissom's like, don't worry, 6 degrees of separation. Like, we're gonna connect you, and aha, there's only 1 degree of separation between you and the victims. This transitions us to Catherine with Jerry. She's asking her about San Diego. She's kind of, like, the ex-wife is kind of playing it off. And then, oh, look at that. She's also selling her house. So she also has a virtual tour online. Yes. And this virtual tour includes a picture of her and Peter.
Well, I don't know if you know, her son is very good at taking videos.
Very good at taking videos. So the picture with her and Peter was enough to get access to Peter's financial information. And it shows that she was co-signing a loan for him, basically like giving him her house, her current house, mm-hmm. because she was going to get her ex-husband's money. So the pay for the hit was like her house, basically.
This is, by the way, the most egregious digital movie magic, because they had like a shot, you know, we're thinking like old school 3 megapixel camera at best. Yeah. And they're like, there is a slanted picture on a bookshelf that takes up maybe like sub 5% of the screen.
Yeah.
And then they blow it up and they resolve it. And my favorite part when they do this is the people's faces are still a little pixelated.
Yes.
Like they're still so they've gone from like a blurry photo where you couldn't see anything, and they've zoomed it in hand.
Yeah.
And it's still a little digital, but like it's so clearly them. I was like, you just went from 3 megapixels to 300 megapixels somehow.
Yep. So that wraps up that storyline. We then have Sarah stopping by Grissom's office. Sorry, there's so many scenes with her and Greg Sanders in this episode that I'm getting befuddled. But she stops by Grissom's office, and this is where she calls him out, as she should. She's like, look, you told me to get a life. I went and I got a life. And then on my day off, you expect me to be there at a moment's notice, and that is very confusing. Like, I don't know what you want me to do. You're telling me one thing, but then you're expecting another thing. And as he goes up to, like, I think possibly respond to her, she's already walked off. She's left.
She's dormant. Yeah, she left.
She left. And that's...
He would have hurt her, but...
Yeah, that's true. And that's the end of the episode. So, Nick, did you think about today's episode?
It's funny. It does not age well. It gets... Every time... First watch, the second walk through, I definitely, like, lowered my opinion. And even just reviewing it, I was almost like, oh, I don't know, maybe... So, but I did write down... a play, not a skip, but I only gave it two and a half ratings. Can't even read my own writing. So it's not great. The thing is, like, there's a lot of this episode that's fine. There's just a lot of weird stuff in this episode. And we didn't talk about it. There was when they had like the DNA and there was like two sets of chromosomes or whatever, they show this like piece of paper and it's like, it lists out the chromosomes and they're all X chromosomes. So there's not even male DNA. It's supposed to be the semen. There's a scene with Nick and Warwick where Warwick tells Nick to get his panties in a bunch. I was like, oh, that's not a good phrase for today. So it's just, there's a bunch of weird things in the writing in this episode that I was just like, you know, I'm not saying like, I don't think I would ever rewatch this episode. And if you miss this episode, it probably wouldn't hurt your viewing of the season.
Yeah. So I think my rating for this episode is a 3 out of 5. And I say that this, with the caveat of, this is like a fun episode to watch if you don't think too hard about it.
Yeah. Like, there's like parts of the episode that's kind of fun.
Yeah, it moves fast. Like, my first watch through, I was like, oh, wow, the episode's already over. Like, it just, like, kind of keeps you moving, and it, like, transitions well between the two different crime scenes, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I can't give it a skip because, like, the first time I watched it, I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah.
But don't rewatch it.
No, yes. I would give it a play. Like, it definitely wouldn't be like, oh yeah, you have to. I definitely think, as you said, it's a standalone episode. I think the only thing that ties it to other episodes is Sarah at the end saying,
yeah,
hey, you told me to get a life. I went and I got a life. And now you're expecting me to, like, at a moment's notice, be here on my day off. Like, that's what do you want from me, basically? But beyond that, it's very much a standalone.
You know, they don't have this down. I guess it's not really a callback. They didn't call back to it. But this isn't the first time she's coming in her day off.
Right.
She willingly came in her day off sort of happy about it in an earlier season. And so I think a good thing to point out is, like, she is getting a life. And now it does bother her because her life is more than her work.
Right.
And the real motivator for coming back to work is Grissom. Right. And the tension, you know, and the fact that she was sent off on her own and didn't get to spend the time with him.
Right.
Really doubled down on not making it good for her.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree entirely. But yeah, I give this a play. It's a fun episode to watch. Don't think too hard about it. Like, once you start, like, diving into it, you're like, this isn't great. But it's a fun episode if you just, like, just watch it without an acute lens to it. But we'll see what we rate our next episode when we return next week with season 3, episode 4, A Little Murder. In the meantime,
A Little Murder, like a little murder. Murder or just a little bit of murder,
A Little Murder. You'll find out why you'll find out why it's called A Little Murder. I really hope it's not.
Well,
we're going to find out. In the meantime, you can support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com and search for Who Are You, a CSI podcast. You can also find us on Facebook in the same way. We're also on Twitter/X and Instagram at Who Are You CSI Pod. You can email us at whoareyoucsipod@gmail.com. And you can also find us at whoareyoucsipod.com. So otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.